Hey mamas! The way we spend our money has changed a lot since we've had children. So to help with the mom guilt and the need to still buy cute things, the Fruits of Motherhood shop is donating proceeds of each sale to Every Mother Counts. EveryMotherCounts.org is a nonprofit organization that works to improve access to quality maternity care around the world. Just buy a hat, a shirt, or anything else in the Fruits of Motherhood shop and you help a mama in need. Just go to fruitsofmotherhood.com/shop and use the code podcast to get 10% off anything in the store. That's fruitsofmotherhood.com/shop, promo code podcast. Now back to this amazing episode. Hi, I am Linda Fruits from Fruits of Motherhood, and tonight we are going to be speaking with Aubrey from Baby Sleep Doctor on Instagram, and we're going to find out if babies truly do grow out of poor sleep, so stay tuned. And I'm going to turn it over to you. Aubrey, hi. Can you introduce yourself a little bit?
Yes, I'm Aubrey. I'm the baby sleep doctor, and my professional background is in psychology. I have my doctorate in clinical and forensic psychology, and I went back to work after having my daughter, and it's a really heavy place to work. So I took a little bit of a break, and at the same time, I was sleep training my daughter, and I was learning all about sleep, and so I decided to go and get certified, and I've been doing the sleep training ever since.
That's awesome. So how do you get certified as a sleep doctor?
That's a really good question. So my doctor component comes from my doctorate in psychology. Uh-huh. And so the sleep portion is going through a training by someone else who has a certification program. And so I've been trained by somebody who's kind of a prominent sleep consultant and got my certification through that. So it's a combination of my psychology and the sleep consulting.
I love it. You are a doctor of sleep.
Yes.
That's fantastic. So, and how long have you been doing this?
I've been doing the sleep consulting for about 2.5 years.
And you worked on your daughter. You said you have one or two girls?
I have two kids. I have a little girl and a little boy. So one of each. Awesome. Yeah. So I sleep trained my daughter. I didn't know much about baby sleep because we don't really talk about that when you're pregnant. You're worried about, you know, labor and delivery and breastfeeding and all these other things. And so my daughter was a pretty good sleeper, but she had a pacifier, and for her it was disruptive. And so when I learned about sleep training and that she could be sleeping better and I also could be sleeping better, I wanted to learn more about it. So yes, she was good. She was easy to sleep train, but I went through it myself with her. She was about 8 months old. And so I've been there. I've been the mom who's done it.
That's very good to know. And then do you also help like your friends and family through this?
I do. I offer my support and my services, and, you know, working with friends and family, they don't always want to listen. So I kind of stand by, and when they feel like they want some more help, I'm always there to help.
That's so true. You know, I didn't even think of that because I also sleep trained my kids. So to me, this is like a must do kind of thing. But I did. So some of your friends, do they think that they don't need it?
I think that it's hard. Some people, I think that they all need it, but they think that it's kind of a psychology part of it. If you're not paying for something, you're not as invested in like following it, you know? Yes. So when they ask for my tips and my help, I will always give it, but they're kind of like, well, I'll pick and choose. Like, maybe I'll try this, maybe I'll try that. It's like, well, it kind of is a process. So you maybe want to follow all of it. So, and then they'll come around and they'll say, okay, it's not working. I need to actually listen to what you're saying now.
That's so funny. So when it comes to work, are you working from home now? How does that work with being a sleep doctor?
I am working from home, and it is chaotic to all the moms working from home and your kids are there. It's not easy.
Yeah, I know.
But I'm making it work. I hide away when I can, and my husband helps out. So it's nice that we have a good teamwork going on.
That's cool. And so do you text mom? Like, how does it work like in the middle of the night when they need help, or do they report back to you in the morning?
So I have a couple different things that I offer. I have my sleep guides, which are digital that you can download, but I also have personalized services. And one of them is a 30-minute call. And so I always send out like an intake questionnaire, so I get all the background and history ahead of time, so we can spend our 30 minutes just troubleshooting and going over stuff and actually talking, as opposed to, so how old is your baby and how much do they weigh? So I have all that ahead of time. So that's just 30 minutes. And it's really helpful. People, you know, end up with a plan of action and go to it. My other service is a personalized plan. And so that comes with two calls. So the first one is to go over the history and go over everything and get sleep goals and sleep needs. And then I write a plan for your family and then I send it to you. And then we have another call to kind of go over it. So I don't do the middle of the night texting and all of that kind of stuff, unless they need that. That's an extra thing that I'm happy to offer, but that's like, because I will go on all night.
Yeah, I know. I just think about like when I first did it and I was like in the middle of the night, I'm like, what am I doing? You know, like my first rodeo, so to speak. So I just assumed that that's what people need.
I offer that. That is an offer if people want that. And I'm often on my phone. So if you text me, if you send me a DM, I am there to answer you and help you through it for sure. Yes.
Aren't we all? Yeah. And so let's talk about sleep training. I know that for a lot of people, it's very taboo, and you can explain it in your own words and tell me all about that.
Yeah. Well, I also want to hear your experience though with it and how you did all of it. But basically sleep training, the way that I approach it is teaching and encouraging babies to learn how to fall asleep on their own, so they can get back to sleep on their own. And the reason why that's important is because if they need some outside assistance, whether it's rocking or feeding or pacifiers, then they're going to need that to get back to sleep each time they wake up. And it just becomes really disruptive over time. And so babies are learning and growing during sleep. You know, they need to sleep well. So it's helpful to teach them to do that on their own. There's no part of it that's lacking in comfort. You know, you're there to be with your baby if they need it, and you tend to them as they need it, but it's about teaching them to fall asleep on their own so they can get back to sleep on their own and sleep better over time.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. My first one, I tried to do the guess and check method.
Yes.
And it upset him much worse. Yes. And it upset me too, because when I go in there, I want to intervene. It was harder on both of us. And right. So I actually did the full extinction method, just, you know, made sure it was bedtime, nap time, you know, I did all the timing and whatever, just put him in his room, and we both cried.
Yeah. It's emotional for sure.
Of course.
Yeah, especially for sharing that. That's
well,
like,
thank you.
People are going to come after you.
For that. Oh, for sure. But I went through the 4-month sleep regression, and there was no turning back. It was like every other hour, and I was just dying, like literally every single day. So I was like, I got to do something about this.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's a good point, is that they're not sleeping and you're not sleeping. You can't be your best self as a parent without sleep. I mean, you're a human too. That's what I want people to remember. It's like it's a biological need that we all need sleep. So
yeah. Of course. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so let's go over a couple myths and things about sleep training now. So one of them is, do babies actually ever grow out of this?
So, you know, it depends on the issue. Do babies always need a pacifier? No. People will say, oh, they don't go to college with a pacifier. Okay, sure. At some point, they'll drop the pacifier. But I know a lot of adults who still have trouble sleeping and who have to fall asleep with the TV on or the window open. So sleep problems don't just like disappear one day. They take effort and work. And, you know, even the AAP, the American Association of Pediatrics, says that it's behavioral. It has to take behavioral interventions. If there isn't a medical issue, of course, you know, medical issues aside. But so really, no, they don't just suddenly stop one day. Do they get better? Sure. Do kids grow out of certain things? Sure. A 10-year-old doesn't maybe want to sleep with mom and dad anymore, so therefore they're out of the bed, but they might have other issues because they still don't know how to go to sleep on their own and sleep well. So for me, I think that what I've seen and what I know is that it changes into other things.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Is there any other big myths that you hear about a lot?
Well, I think that one on the other side is that a sleep-trained baby, you can never cuddle them again. You can never snuggle, and they will be abandoned. And it's just, not the case. And so I've seen from some of your posts that your son is in your bed sometimes. And
unfortunately.
I snuggle my son when he won't take a nap. My daughter wants us to lie down with her at bedtime, and they're both sleep-trained. So I think that you're able to better connect with their emotional needs because you know, oh, this is so unusual that they're needing to come into bed or do something. So therefore I'm happy to do that for you and we can cuddle and all of these things, but they have the foundation of the sleep training to be able to go back to sleeping well on their own after. So I think that that's one that really scares parents. Like, will I never be able to cuddle my child again? No, of course not.
You have all day.
You have all day. They'll be in your bed at some point. Like, it's
yeah. So speaking of my bed monster that keeps sneaking into my bed, he's three. And a lot of people who have three-year-olds that I've spoken to, I've run into this issue, this like new thing where they don't want to stay in their bed. Yeah. What do you do about that?
So I think, you know, there's a lot that's going on. First of all, right now is a really weird time in the world. And
for sure,
toddlers are at that age where they understand so much, but they don't really understand, right? So they're feeling anxiety. There's a lot going on. Things are different. So I think that when you can be flexible with them, it's really important to, you know, toddlers need a little extra something, a little extra snuggle. Sure, you can get in my bed, but you want to have boundaries around it, you know, and you don't want to be like, whenever you decide you can come in, or just, you know, if you're going to let them in your bed anyway, it's okay to start out with having them in your bed or lie down with him at bedtime, if that will help him stay in his room. There are always, you always want to set boundaries. So also I like the Hatch light. That's just one product that I like to use. You know, you can have your toddler pick the color that turns on. Of course, my daughter chooses pink. So when the pink light turns on in the morning, that's when she may leave her bed, and not any sooner than that. You know, it's not going to be perfect, but I think that toddlers are really, they're at an interesting time where they need a little extra support, and it's okay to do that.
I think it's okay
with you. If it's okay with you, not okay with you. If you're like, I don't want them in my bed, I don't want them in my room, then that's okay too. And there are things to work on to do that.
Yeah, and I think when you said that it's not going to be perfect, I think that's something that I have to remind myself constantly. Like, it's never going to be just like one and done.
No, no, because they're turning into different people all the time, you know?
Yeah, every day, every hour.
All constantly. An eight-month-old is so different from 18 months, from 3 years old. I mean, those are totally different beings, you know? And so they're developing, they understand more, they're more physically able. I mean, just getting out of their bed is like really exciting. You know, I'm going to currently get out of here. So that takes time to teach them. Like, no, you may not. You have to stay in your bed. So it's just a process, and they are evolving, and you have to evolve with them.
So backtracking just a little bit, when do you recommend people can start sleep training?
So you wouldn't formally sleep train before 4 months. There's no right or wrong time. I mean, some people will send me a message like, my baby's, you know, 18 months old. Is it too late? It's never too late. You just don't want to do it before 4 months old. You can start practicing sleep skills before 4 months, but 4 months is really when they're cognitively able. And so you brought up a really good point of the regression. And so that really is kind of the time, because what happens at the 4 month regression is their cognitive functioning is shifting. They're more aware of their surroundings. So they're able to learn how to fall asleep on their own, and that this is the new routine and what's going on, and their sleep stages shift. So they're developmentally able to handle the shift in their sleeping. That would be the earliest.
Okay. And does that also coincide with night feeds?
So night feeds, you can still have night feeds when you're sleep training. There's, I want moms to understand, it's not about cutting anything out of your child's life. You know, they can, if they're still waking up to eat, they can still eat and then go back to sleep on their own. Most babies, you know, it's a little bit medical, so I don't want to give too much medical advice, but from my own experience with my own two kids, I consult with pediatricians, and generally the concept is that if a baby is a healthy weight and developmentally ready between 4 and 6 months, they can drop their own night feeds on their own. They will naturally wean if they have these independent sleep skills. If you're wanting to wean your baby, like I don't want them to eat anymore in the middle of the night, then talk to your pediatrician. But yes, generally between 4 and 6 months, babies will wean themselves, sometimes earlier, sometimes later, but that's the consensus.
Okay, cool. And that actually, my pediatrician, I think he told me, he's like, is he taking a full feed? He would always just ask me this question, and I'm like, I don't know, I'm breastfeeding, I have no idea. Yeah. And I'm half asleep anyways. So I'm like, maybe, maybe not. And then like after a while, it's like, maybe he is just using me as a sleep prop, you know?
Right. And mom plus, is a really easy pacifier. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I eventually just was like, okay, we're going to give it a whirl.
Yeah. And it turns out that they start to sleep better. If a baby's hungry, you'll know it, of course. And so feed your baby if they're hungry, but they're not, just because it's kind of silly, but I always say, if my husband came to my side of the bed with a sandwich, I probably would take a bite in the middle of the night, but I'm not hungry. Go make a sandwich at 2 a.m. Right. So just because your baby eats doesn't mean that they're hungry. It's mm-hmm. become a habit, or they need it to get back to sleep. So being able to understand, is it a full feed, and how healthy are they and developmentally ready? So it's mm-hmm. a process.
And let's talk about sleep props a little bit, since we are talking about the pacifier and the boob yes. and all that good stuff.
So a sleep prop is a generic term, but basically anything outside of the baby that they need to get back to sleep. So if it's something that provides some comfort, that's not necessarily a prop, but when they're not able to sleep without something, then that is the prop. And mom can be the prop, you know? So mm-hmm. if it's like, oh, well, sometimes I'm nursing, sometimes I'm rocking, sometimes it's this or that, then just you are the prop and that's possible. Mm-hmm. They need you every time they wake up to get back to sleep. So why it's not helpful is because they need to be able to go back to sleep. We all wake up in the night, but they need to be able to get back to sleep and not totally come out of a sleep cycle. So that's why you want to really limit props. And it also interferes with naps a lot of times. So they're helpful to start. They don't stay helpful.
Uh-huh. And so like the pacifier, let's say, my youngest can replace it in his mouth, has been for a long time, but is that still a problem or not anymore since he can do it on his own?
So the pacifier really is only a problem if the pacifier is a problem. You know, if it's mm-hmm. not, if he's able to put it back in his mouth, and he does, because my daughter could also. I mean, I was that mom that was like, we'll never have pacifiers. And I was buying glow-in-the-dark pacifiers. I'm like, find this pacifier. Find it and put it in your own mouth. And she could find it. There were a million in there. And she uh-huh. still would throw it out of the crib, and I would have to come back and give it to her. And I was like, this is not helping. So
yeah.
if it's a problem, then it's a problem. If it's not, then it's not. So if your son gets it and goes back to sleep with it, then it's not a problem. It might become one, but it might not.
Yeah. And do you have a preference on like age when they get rid of it?
Not really. I mean, that's totally up to you. I kind of joke when I say that I don't want to be dealing with a toddler taking it away, only because toddlers can fight you on it, you know?
Yeah, for real. It's so true.
That's they'll the only
one. Everything.
Yeah, exactly. So if you want to like argue with a toddler about the pacifier, then that's fine. Go for it. I personally don't want to argue with my toddler about it, but yeah.
That makes total sense. I can't even, yes. Like, okay. That's when I have to make sure I get rid of it before he can like fight me for it.
Yes, exactly.
That is funny. So what about room sharing and sleep training? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, you know, it's totally doable. Lots of parents want to do it. You just want baby to have their own actual sleep surface. So I know that there are people out there who will, they probably don't call it sleep training, but they're able to do that if you're co-sleeping. I just don't find it to be as successful. So mm-hmm. I don't work with that, but baby can absolutely stay in the room with you. And sometimes as babies are getting older, you need a little bit of a room separation so they don't stand up and look at you and like, hi, I see you. Can you please pick me up? But otherwise, if everyone's still sleeping well, again, it's one of those things. If you're all sleeping okay, then it's not a problem. But if you're waking each other up and every time the baby grunts, you wake up. And if you get up to go to the bathroom, they wake up, then it's problematic. But if it's not causing anyone issues, then go for it.
Yeah, that was I was always bothered by every single noise. I feel like moms don't sleep deeply once they become a mom.
Yeah, no, we never sleep again, but you could sleep a little bit better maybe if they're not right next to you.
Uh-huh. And then when also just room sharing in general, do you recommend a certain age or still just by the same rules, like whatever works for you?
I really am of the mind, whatever works for you. I know that the AAP recommends between 6 to 12 months having them in the same room. And if that works for you, that's great. But it is a recommendation. It's not mm-hmm. like this is what has to be done. So I feel like moms feel really shamed and afraid to say like, I don't want the baby in my room anymore. You know, can they go in their own room? Babies can sleep in a different room and that's okay if you're comfortable with it.
I remember thinking the same thing when they told me in the hospital that they're like, they have to stay in your room until up to a year. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, I didn't know that. The nurse is telling me this as I'm holding the baby. And I'm like, okay, up to a year. And I like told my husband. And then I remember like after like 3 months, I'm like, no.
If it's not working for you, then it's not working. And I find everyone sleeps better when they're in their own space. So
for sure. Yeah.
Do what works best for them.
My pediatrician actually used the same sandwich analogy.
Oh, really?
But as a 24 buffet. He's like, if you were sleeping next to a 24 buffet, wouldn't you want to nibble a little bit here and there? I'm like, I would.
I probably would. Just take a little bite.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Honestly, I really want my husband to bring me a sandwich at 2 a.m. Like, that just sounded like amazing. So
I know. I put it out there and he still hasn't taken the bait. He hasn't done it.
And let's talk about car naps, because I have been nap trapped, not so much recently because of current events, but does that mean that the nap is like gone? How do you handle that?
So kind of. I mean, for babies, even a 5 minute, and toddlers, a 5 minute nap is like equivalent to a full nap for them, but it is not restorative, it is not restful, it's not the best. So that's why my kids, I always say they were like an airline ticket. They were non-transferable. I could never take them from the car and put them in their crib to keep sleeping.
Me neither.
Never. Not once. So for me, I had to always just keep driving. So keep driving. I've wasted gas, pull over, or plan if you can, you know, when it's the doctor's appointment, uh-huh. even say, okay, can we make it for, you know, 9 a.m. because his nap is at 10. So we'll then get in the car and go home and he'll sleep in the car and I'll stay. So do your best to plan your drives around nap time, or so early that they just woke up that they won't fall asleep. But if they do fall asleep, you really want to give them that opportunity to keep sleeping, because that's the nap for the most part. Mm-hmm. You might have a baby who gives you good luck and will go to the crib right after that, but it's very unusual. So just make that the nap and let it be as long as possible.
I like that. Yeah, I know one of my friends was able to always transfer. I'm like, that sounds so nice.
Never, not once.
Yeah, me neither. So sleep training, I know, does have the possibility to make your baby nap longer. Is there any other ways to lengthen naps for like young babies?
Yeah, so how young are you talking? I mean, because newborns have their own set of rules. Mm-hmm. Little babies around 4 to 6 months also kind of have their own in-between rules.
Maybe let's do 4 to 6, we'll start from the beginning, newborn.
Okay. So with newborns, it's all about practice. And I want moms to know that there are some basics that you can follow to just keep in mind. It's possible to set a foundation. And so for newborns, you want to use the props, go for it, use all the props, because there are no bad habits for newborns. You can't spoil them. And you really want them to sleep. That's most important. So if you are putting your newborn down for a nap, which is a good idea, every once in a while, put them down. It's hard. Uh-huh. Sleep on your body, but sometimes put them down. And if they wake up, you can feel free to go rush in and rock them back to sleep, give them the pacifier, all of that stuff to kind of lengthen the nap. That's fine to do with newborns. As they're getting closer to that 4 months, where they're going to be more aware, you want to just limit the props, because the props tend to create short naps. So instead, you have a couple choices. You can rush right in and kind of like coax them back to sleep and shh them and quiet them down. Sometimes that will help. You want to definitely make sure that the room is dark, a sound machine, if you can, because the sound machine keeps noise out. So that's why I like to have it, is that it helps them stay asleep. It's not a prop. It's not going to put them to sleep, but it helps them stay asleep. So good temperature, the ideal environment will really be helpful with that. And then for babies over 6 months, sometimes they're really stimulated by that rushing in and trying to shush them and get them back to sleep. So what you can do instead is, if they're not upset, so no crying, if they're not upset, leave them in the crib for as long as you can. Sometimes they fall back to sleep. At the very least, they're still resting in there and they're still having a positive association with, oh, the crib is kind of a nice place to be. I'm not upset. It's okay. And that helps over time lengthen naps, because they're not being picked up immediately. And sometimes they do fall back to sleep.
That makes total sense. And speaking of the falling in love with your crib thing, are there any other ways? Cause I know a lot of moms talk about how their kids hate the crib and like, how do they overcome that?
Yeah. So it's a process. It's not something that happens in one night or one week even. And that's kind of going back to the newborn thing too, is you want to introduce them to the bassinet and the crib as much as possible. The newborn phase is of course about snuggles and holding them and cuddling and all of that stuff. But I kind of use the phrase that babies get used to what they're introduced to. So if they're never introduced to their crib, then of course they're not going to like it when you suddenly put them down in it, you know? So it's about practice in the early stages. Put them down as often as you can. Try for bedtime, try for one nap of the day. As they're getting older, if they've never been in the crib before, I say, you know, you want them to get familiar with the space so they can play in the nursery. There can be some playtime in there. So getting used to the room, get them to feel comfortable. I sometimes have moms sleep with the crib sheet, you know, and okay. then heat on. So it smells like mom. It smells familiar. Mm-hmm. If they have a sleep safe, love, you know, things that are just comforting to them, have it like that. Also, you want to really be consistent with timing because you don't want them to be overly tired when you put them down. If they're overly tired, they're going to fight bedtime. That's just the way it's going to be. And so you might think, oh, they hate their crib, but really they're just beyond exhausted and they're not going to be happy wherever they're being put down. Mm-hmm. You want to be really predictable. You babies and young children thrive when they know exactly what to expect. So every time it's nap time, every time it's bedtime, we do it this way. And then they get comfortable with it. Babies like to know what's coming. So, and then you want to put them down awake because you put them down asleep and then they wake up in their crib, they're going to be really startled about how they got there. And again, they hate their crib, but really they're just like, I fell asleep in your arms and now I'm in this random crib. So it's a little upsetting.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Total sense. So the putting them down but awake thing is still like, when can you just start that from like day one?
Yes, it's not going to be perfect. It's not going to go great from day one, you know, but you try as best you can. And that's really, you know, keeping early tired cues in mind, because if you're putting down an exhausted baby, they're not going to just fall asleep. But if you're putting down a baby who's like right around the time of getting tired, mm-hmm. that's a good time. They'll lay down. I mean, I hear from parents all the time, like my newborn's just kind of playing in their crib for, it's been 10 minutes. They're not crying. And it's like,
that's wonderful.
Good. Yeah. Let them fall asleep in there. You know, if they become upset, pick them up. So uh-huh. you can absolutely start from day one. It's just about practicing. Do not stress about it. But it becomes more important as babies get older and more aware. Because like I said, if they are aware, I fell asleep somewhere else and I'm waking up here, that's going to be not, you wouldn't like it.
No, yeah, that would be very strange.
Yeah.
And so let's say like every single time you put them down, they get upset. Like what do moms do?
Well, it's different based on their age. So for newborns, mm-hmm. you can always comfort them, pick them back up and comfort them and just keep practicing. And if you need to take a break from it, go ahead, you know, practice tomorrow or next week. There's no need to make it something that is stressful to anybody. This is mm-hmm. just guidance, you know, and to keep in the back of your mind. As babies get older, again, you really want to watch that they're not overly tired. You want to make sure that you have them in their wake window because that will contribute to it. So, you know, beyond getting into like how to sleep train and how to do mm-hmm. it, just little things like making sure that they're not too tired, that you're not using a prop, that the room is dark enough, that you mm-hmm. kind of set the stage for it, and then just be there for comfort as necessary and kind of keep practicing, really.
Mm-hmm. It feels like it's a constant thing. I remember like the first time my child slept through the night, I was like, I am done. This is amazing. And lo and behold, I was not done.
You're still not done. None of us are done.
Right? We're never done.
No, the first year especially is really tough for naps. You can get night kind of under control, and then if mm-hmm. there's a pickup here and there, you can get back on track pretty easily. But naps are just always fluctuating. They're suddenly awake for longer and you're transitioning down on naps, and now it's tough. It just is. So no, it's never ending. It's not like this is the end of it, read this and do this and you're finished, but you keep it mm-hmm. in the back of your mind, and you're at least able to kind of follow a structure of like, well, you know what, they're showing me these signs, maybe it's time to drop a nap. I don't know, that's what it looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like whenever something isn't working anymore, like what was always working is not, I'm like, we got to change the sleep again.
Yeah, it's always sleep. It's always kind of back to the sleep.
Yes. So putting babies to sleep later or earlier when they're waking up too early, can you explain that a little bit more?
Yes. So it's, you know, it would make sense that putting a baby down later would help them wake up later, but it usually backfires. So mm-hmm. the reason is that you want to stay consistent with a bedtime. And so that 7 to 8 hour for little babies is just when their bodies naturally are, you know, making melatonin and getting ready for their longest stretch of sleep. And babies tend to wake up early, between 6 and 7 is very common. And so we want to do an earlier bedtime because they actually do end up sleeping longer stretches, even though they're still waking up early, mm-hmm. but it gives them an opportunity for 10 to 12 hours of sleep, which is what they really need. So especially if they're not taking great naps during the day, you know, mm-hmm. you want to make sure they're getting as much nighttime sleep as possible. So putting them down later causes them to be overly tired, which causes them to wake up earlier.
Uh-huh.
It's a vicious cycle. I mean, I've told parents, like, if they're so tired and they miss their last nap, put them to bed way early, like 6:30. And it sounds shocking, but do it. And then they still sleep until 7. So it actually works out to have an earlier bedtime.
Yeah. And that's a nice break.
Nice. I love my evenings. Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah. I remember when I used to totally freak out when my kid missed a nap or had a short nap or whatever, like it totally made me unravel. But then as soon as I realized that that meant an early bedtime, I'm like, sweet.
I'm kind of okay with this. Like, oh yeah. All right. Bedtime's coming.
Yeah. It's only a little bit longer. And do you deal a lot with colicky babies, or what does that mean to you in your line of work?
Yes. So colic is just one of those kinds of catch-all terms. And the problem is that nobody really knows what it is, not even your pediatrician. And so it's a phase, usually in the newborn stage, and it kind of creeps up around 4 to 6 weeks. And it can last for several weeks. It can even last a couple of months, but it's basically when babies just they're inconsolable. There's tons of crying, nothing works. And it's really, really frustrating for parents. The good news is that it doesn't mean anything about your baby. Like, they're not sick, there's nothing wrong with them, and it doesn't, as far as we know, have any negative lasting consequences. It's just really upsetting. You know, nobody wants to see their little baby cry for that long. But yeah, what we have to remember is that newborns are just learning how to even be alive. You know, they're like figuring out, their bellies don't know how to digest, and they're overstimulated, they're not stimulated enough, and they didn't sleep well, and it's just a confusing time. It's also kind of called the witching hour, you know, because it happens around the same time every day. And so there are some things that you can do. You know, you can really like dim the lights and make it very calm in the evenings. You can take them into a different environment and just kind of help them. Like I said, there are a lot of theories, but I kind of find that as moms with newborns, we're always so worried that they're hungry. And so sometimes what I have found is that we're feeding them too much, and then they are uncomfortable, which makes it really hard to sleep. Right? Like, if you're gassy, you're not just like falling asleep, right?
Yeah. So yeah. Yeah.
It's not that alone, of course. That's not like the only thing, but I feel like that kind of contributes to it. And so really being able to, during the day, watch those tired cues and get them to nap regularly can help, so that they're sleeping well and then eating well. And it is a phase, which means it passes. So just kind of stick with it.
That's true. And what are some signs that your kids do need better sleep? What are the telltale signs?
Okay, so you mentioned early wakings, fighting naps, short naps, fighting bedtime, and of course, night wakings. And so when you don't have to have all of these happening at once, but if there's something like they were kind of sleeping well, now they're waking really early in the morning and they're fighting me at bedtime. The hard part about sleep is that it could be it's time to drop a last nap, or it could be that they're overly tired. And so you just have to really know your own kid in that respect, you know, like actually my kid is okay on sleeping only 10 hours at night because he does take good naps. So the early wakings aren't that abnormal, or this is so different, but you know what, he hasn't been sleeping well. And so he's been taking really bad naps. So then you want to move bedtime earlier and just give the opportunity for more restful sleep.
Yeah. To be flexible.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Be flexible. Mm-hmm.
And so what is the difference between hunger cues and sleepy cues?
Good question. So they look really similar. And it's important to kind of keep this in mind, especially with newborns and little ones, because it is so confusing. And we don't want to overfeed or miss a nap and miss, you know, that kind of wake window. So tired cues, the early signs are generally, you know, rubbing their nose and pulling on their ear and kind of just zoning out and being a little bit less social. But that looks a lot like hunger cues, right? Like, well, the late cues are turning their head away because they're trying to avoid stimulation. So that's a late tired cue, and yawning. But so hunger cues are rooting, which is turning inward, but turning away can also look like tired cues, because turning inward, rooting towards the chest, can look like turning away from stimulation. And of course, crying is like, are they hungry? Are they tired? So you want to be able to kind of understand, if you feed your baby and then they've been awake for 45 minutes, they're probably crying because they're tired. Since they're newborns, they can only handle 45 minutes or whatever the wake window is. So, so understanding cues and knowing that they look alike can help you kind of differentiate them.
And so that kind of plays into the eat, play, sleep thing. I was really bad and I didn't do that.
No, it's not bad.
Oh, okay. Is it just like what they recommend you do so that way you kind of have a schedule?
Yeah, it's okay. So it's a recommendation because of like what I was just saying. It helps you as a parent try to understand what your baby is needing, right? Mm-hmm. Because we want to understand, are you hungry or are you tired? Because a newborn, it's really confusing. So if you feed your baby when they wake up and then you stimulate a little bit and they're kind of getting fussy again, you have a good sense that they're probably tired because I just fed you and right. It's coming up being 45 to 60 minutes, you likely need a nap. So it helps with newborns. It's not at all meant to be a strict schedule that's like, I have to do it this way. Some babies won't fall asleep for a while and need two feeds in 1 week window, and that's totally okay. Mm-hmm. The other issue for babies as they're getting older is that you want to do your best to not have this feeding to sleep association where they they feed, that's the only way that they can fall asleep. Because that really is hard to tell in the middle of the night when they're waking up. Are you waking up because you need me to feed you so you can go back to sleep or because you're hungry? So just separating it is just helpful. You don't have to do it. You're not bad for not doing it. It's something to keep in mind. And if it works out for you, then that's great. But
yeah,
don't.
No, I nursed my babies to sleep.
Yeah.
Both of them constantly, all the time.
There's nothing wrong with doing that. There's nothing wrong with that at all. It's totally natural. And if it's working, then that's great. What happens is when babies wake up a million times a night needing to nurse and mom just can't do it anymore. So it's just helpful with breaking that. But if it works for you and it makes you happy and they're sleeping well, then go for it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Is there ways for you to tell just based on their sleep if there is something else? Like, you know, moms are always concerned that it's not hunger or sleep. It's something else. You know, do you notice anything that would be?
That's a good question. I mean, this kind of sounds silly, but I always tell moms, like, you have a mom gut and you should listen to it. And if your mom gut is saying this is a different kind of cry or they haven't been now, I mean, obviously there are all kinds of things going on with babies. So it's not always hunger or tiredness and a bad nap might be because they're overly tired. I mean, these are like the general guides, but there's always health issues that could be going on or something else. So absolutely, if your mom gut is saying this doesn't feel right or this sudden disruption in sleep, there's no explanation for it and it feels off to me, then absolutely check in with your pediatrician. Stay away from Google because it can be really crazy, but talk to somebody and listen to yourself, really.
Yeah, and that's much easier said than done, the Google thing.
Same. I do all that, so I don't take my own advice, so.
So since you talk about sleep training, obviously there's going to be some people who get upset about that. Do you have people online that kind of say mean things to you?
Oh my gosh.
You do?
Okay. I of course have heard of mom shaming but I have, you know, a good group of girlfriends and supportive family. So I have not really ever experienced that, but not until growing my Instagram account have I seen the levels. I mean, some to me, but really which I can take and that's okay.
Yeah, there's always going to be someone.
Always someone always has something to say. Something is very upsetting. There's always something to be judgmental about. And like I said, you can say that to me. I really don't care, but I do not like it when people come at the moms on my page who are there because they're needing support and someone will chime in and shame them or judge them or talk them out of their feelings. And it is just mind boggling to me because just you don't do it then. You I'm not going to come into your house and tie you up and sleep train your baby in front of your eyes and make you watch. I'm not going to do that. I don't think anybody is.
Actually, could you do that? Like if we ever had another kid?
Yes, I will help you out. I will do it. I'll let you sleep. Okay.
Oh my goodness. That's so funny. I know. It is so true.
If she wants to, then let her. I just think we should all just, you know, judge less and stay out of it. And if someone asks for your opinion, then give it. But otherwise, sleep is such a controversial issue. And if you want a good laugh, you should find my post on the ideal bedtimes for babies. It is a trigger. Could you imagine?
But I can't wait actually to read it. Okay, I have to be honest. Sometimes when people are really nasty, I delete their comments because I don't like that kind of negativity. But you did leave it there because that would be fun to read.
I think I always, so here's my little trick. I always will leave it because I got something to say back. It's either nice, like to kind of shame them back. Like, you know, that's great if that works for you. But this mom is, you know, or I give it to them when it's necessary. Mm-hmm. And then I restrict them. So they can keep commenting, but nobody sees it.
Oh, I like this.
And their comment stays. So your response stays, their comment stays, but then they're no longer eligible.
I like that. And I know earlier we talked about my pictures of my toddler in my bed. So let's talk about co-sleeping.
Yes, let's talk about it.
Something I said I would never do, never do. Because I also, you know, as most moms, before you have kids, you're like, I'm going to be super strict. Never going to sleep in my bed.
Yeah.
Look at me now.
And so here's the thing. I find that there are two sides of it. I think that there are the moms who always knew they would, always have wanted to, and get nothing but pleasure from it. And that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And if your baby is sleeping well, then go for it. I mean, you know, when they're newborns, you of course have to be really careful. And as long as you're doing it safely, then that's fine. If it makes you happy. Then I find that other moms who tend to be, it's called like reactive co-sleeping, where this is the only thing that will get us some rest. So,
and then by all means, yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes it ends up working out okay. But a lot of times I find that moms are still not sleeping well, and the child is not sleeping well, and it's not really helping. And so those moms tend to be the ones who come to me. If co-sleeping is working for you and you love it and it's great, then they're definitely not the ones who are on my page. But the ones who are like, you can't get this kid out of my bed, and I'm not sleeping well, and he's not sleeping well, and I want him to not be in my bed, then I can help with that. But there's nothing wrong with co-sleeping. It's great. If you're getting snuggled and you love it and he's sleeping well and it makes you happy, go for it. I think it's just concerning when they're really little to make sure that everyone's safe, because moms tend to be really exhausted and sleep deprived, and it's possible to have, you know, it be unsafe, but if you do it safely and your kids are older, then go for it. If you like it, make you happy.
Yeah, no, you like it? I don't like it. Okay. But at 3 a.m. I'm like, so for me, like I'm always, like every night I walk him back to his bed and he goes back to sleep. He's got a bunk bed and I sleep on the bottom I stay because I notice that if I stand there and I, you know, if he can still see me as soon as I leave and as soon as he opens his eyes for 1 second, he's back in our room. So I tell him that mommy's going to sit down below on your bottom bunk so you can't see me. And that way he's not like just fixated on like, am I there or am I not? And then he falls back asleep. And sometimes I fall asleep on the bottom bunk, but he has no idea.
Right, good.
And then I shuffle out to my own bed.
Yeah. Does he stay in after that one waking?
Yeah, actually that has really been working this week. But then like last night he woke up at 3 a.m. and I was like, oh, I'm supposed to take you back to your bed. But I'm like, I'm so tired.
No. Well, yeah. What if you had like a little mattress in your room for him? Like if he wants to come into the room, he can just get into that bed.
That's a good idea.
I mean, I think I get really creative with toddlers. Maybe it's because now I have my own. And so I'm less like, this is the way to do it. But I think that every kid is different. And so if he's going to keep doing this, I mean, if it's working for you, that like you can walk him back, because that's a great strategy that totally works. But if you're like, I'm too tired, sometimes he gets in the bed, sometimes I walk him back, like that part of it. If you can just say, here are the new rules, you should really stay in your bed until your light turns on. But if you're going to come into our room, you have to be quiet and you have to go straight into your little bed and then you can stay there. Or whatever it is that works for your family to be kind of flexible. I think that it's okay to do that. That's just my personal psychology side and mom side and sleep consulting all mixed together. It's not perfect sleep consulting, but I think that you have to kind of do what works.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have like the nugget. I could totally just like lay that next to my bed and be like, that's your bed.
That's your bed. Don't wake me. Get in and be quiet.
Yeah. Actually, I wish I could show you a picture of how he was sleeping. My husband was on his pillow and my toddler was like a bean shaped up around his head. Like he looked so tiny and he's big for his size. I was like, what? That's, I took a really funny picture. Yeah, it was cute.
It's sweet.
Okay, so let's talk about your digital sleep guide. Tell me more about that.
Okay, so I have three of them, but one's a nap guide. So that's really for babies who are already sleeping well through the night and need just help with daytime. And that's for babies over 4 months. But my newborn sleep guide and my baby sleep guide it's basically step-by-step instructions on exactly how to handle sleep. For those of you who don't want to get a personalized sleep plan or don't have the time for it or whatever it is, this is as if we were talking to each other. It's a lot of hand holding and it's explicit directions on how to handle it. So for newborns, it's up to 4 months is what I have. And it's basically setting a foundation for little ones. And a lot of moms don't even have to end up sleep training after they use it, because it's setting the groundwork and knowing what's coming and how to handle a 4 month regression when it hits, and kind of being able to stick to something. And I wrote that because ultimately none of us want to sleep train, right? None of us want to do that. And, you know, I think it's great. It's very successful, obviously. So nothing against sleep training, but generally we don't look to sleep train, right? So this is something that I wrote with that in mind, that you can come home from the hospital. Like you said, you know, like, you're giving me this baby, I'm coming home, I don't know what, a year in my room, what are you talking about? We give parents no guidance with sleep, but when they leave at home. So this is like how long baby should generally be awake and how to handle these things. And just basically it's about practice. So that's for my newborn people. And then I wrote one, which is for babies over 4 months, up to 18 months, and has ideal schedules in it and exactly how to handle the night. It has three options and it's just really in depth. And I wanted to be able to give people something to use as if we were working together. So those are the two options. You can download them right away and get into it. So it's,
that's awesome. You know, I think that's really helpful, because when you come home from the hospital, you're Googling everything and you're getting information from different sources, or, you know, maybe conflicting information even. So I think having like a one-stop shop for that. That's great. That's wonderful.
Yeah, thanks. I'm excited about it. I love the newborn guide. It's really helpful to parents and gives you a little bit of confidence, which is like so hard to have in those early months. You feel like you're doing everything wrong and nothing makes sense. So at least like there's a little bit of confidence for you.
Yeah, I love it.
Just get on the right track.
Your youngest, you were already sleep training. You were already a doctor at sleep training. And so you did it with your youngest?
I did it with him. Yeah. So I went from my own experience. So exactly. I sleep trained my daughter, 8 months old. I also done it from the beginning. So I know it's all possible. You can start right away until later. And it's always possible to get everyone sleeping well, but it's easier to start from the beginning if you can.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me today. I have had so much fun, and I think that all your information is definitely going to help so many moms.
Thank you so much.
I have one question that I ask everyone in an effort to normalize motherhood, because we all know it's hard and there's so many parts that we like and dislike. So if you could tell me your favorite part of motherhood and your least favorite part of motherhood, that would be great.
Sure. Well, I'll start with the least favorite. Mm-hmm. For me, it really is the loss of identity becoming a mom. You know, I feel like you have to really fight tooth and nail to still be just a person. And that's been hard for me. You know, it's like, dad, go to work and take that call because something popped up and you're like, can I shower? Would that be all right if I took a shower?
I know. Oh my God. You're like hitting it. That's so true.
So for me, that's really been the hardest part, because it's hard to get used to, and you feel guilty for wanting to be your own person too. But at the same time, it's also part of my answer for what I love the most, is that these little people show you that even though you feel like you've lost yourself, that you are like such a strong person. You are such a needed person. You need so much, you know, and so you lose a little bit of yourself, but you get this other perspective. That's amazing. And then, you know, the mushy stuff is that you never realized your heart could be so big and love somebody so intensely. So
yeah. Oh, I love that.
You realize like, I love you. Have you heard of cute aggression?
Oh my God. Yeah, I have that. My baby's thighs. I'm always like, ah, 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 ah. He likes it though. Thankfully.
So sweet.
Well, thanks again so much. If you're not already following Aubrey on Instagram, please do so. It's at, baby sleep doctor DR, just to be clear. And for everyone who is listening, don't forget to subscribe on my website at fruitsofmotherhood.com. You could be the first to hear about new blog posts, videos, podcasts, all that good stuff. So thank you again.
Thank you. It's so nice. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. All right. Have a good night. Hey, mamas. I want to give you a little tip on how I do it all while keeping my kids happy and content. And that's wearing them in the Ergo Baby Omni 360. I love my Ergo Baby Omni 360 because it allows me to get stuff done while they want to be held. In the 360, you can actually use it from the point that they're that little tiny human nugget that's all squishy and really needy up until the point that they might actually break your back. although there is great support. I use it when they're cranky at dinner time, but obviously someone still needs to make dinner. Cleaning, DJing. Go to fruitsofmotherhood.com/ergobaby to get free express shipping on any order. That's fruitsofmotherhood.com/ergobaby.